Hello, Colin Parkinson here, and you're listening to To The Point Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Summer Sportswear, where you can now use code CIAN10, C-I-A-N-10, to get 10% off all your Summer Sportswear products. You can check them out on their social media and on their website. So, Colin, you're very welcome on to the podcast. You're the first guest of Season 3. We're back with a bang. We're back with the big guns.
Very good. I'm honoured.
We're recording on a Tuesday night. I'm sure you're probably having a bit of downtime after a busy weekend. How was the weekend for you?
It wasn't too bad. My weekends usually revolve around GAA matches, Keane. So that's kind of how it works. It was actually a quiet weekend. There was only two games, one Saturday and one on Sunday. So my day off is Friday. So that's where I get, there's no sport on. That's where I get away from everything. Kind of an inter-county season, you're looking at pretty much, you know, just having the Friday off. But look, it's not a bad complaint.
And what is a typical weekend for yourself? I mean, how are you keeping across all the games? You're obviously putting out a podcast at the weekend, kind of wrapping things up, kind of a mini podcast Sunday game type of show. How was the weekend for yourselves normally?
Yeah, well, that's it. Usually Sunday is my busiest day of the whole week because I'm kind of Sunday morning, I'm trying to prepare some of the games, especially the football games that were on Saturday. Because I do a show at about 7:30, 8 o'clock on Sunday night. And then I sit down and watch whatever games are on television on the Sunday. And then I have to try and turn around the show in a couple of hours, you know, because I think it's pretty important to try and get it out on the Sunday night for the Monday morning commuters. We'll be doing that, then trying to edit that. And then I try to stick a promo video out of it as well, which I do when that's finished. So, you know, it might be... you know, Sunday's a long day, not going to lie. Sunday, when you're lying in your bed on Sunday morning, or maybe you're going to a match or doing something, it's a pretty intense day for me. But I'm not too other than Sunday. You know, it's not as bad.
Talk to me about the decision to go on your own, to start Smaller Fish GAA, to launch the podcast, go on to Patreon, go solo. You left the GAA hour. I mean, it was a big show, a lot of people listen to it, including myself, a lot of big GAA fans. It was kind of a ritual each week. Why did you go on your own?
Look, I suppose I had been in Sports Joe for 5 years, and you know, it was kind of getting into my head, what am I going to do looking forward long term, and am I going to be in Sports Joe as a podcast presenter all my life? And like, when I'm 55, am I going to be presenting the GAA hour? And I was thinking, what's the next step here for me? And there was a lot of changes in the company as well. The old owner went, Niall McGarry, and a new ownership came in, a new management. I don't know, I didn't see myself there long term. And then I started thinking, you know, is this something that I could possibly do by myself? Because I ran the whole show when I was in Sports Joe. Like, I didn't have help outside of the production help. You know, people would edit the show for me, and they would edit the promo videos and stuff like that, but all the you know, the production work and the presenting and all would have been done by me. So I thought, if I can learn, you know, the audio editing, which I knew because I used to work in News Talk, and I had a good idea how to edit audio, so it was pretty much the video editing and stuff. I had to get a bit of a crash course in that, and kind of started thinking, look, I'd be well able to handle this workload. So, you know, and plus Sports Joe were talking about going on Patreon themselves. So they kind of forced my hand. So I was like, if I'm going to lose all my audience, because you lose a lot of your audience, you know, I'm way down, you know, I'm not broadcasting anywhere near the amount that I used to. So I was like, if they're going to go on Patreon, why would I do that for them? Because I can easily do that by myself. And obviously during COVID, a lot of stuff was done online. So I didn't have I didn't really have the studio costs and stuff like that. I knew there was lots of programs that you could use to do it yourself. So that was kind of it. This was buzzing around in my head for maybe a year. And then when the talk about the GAR going on Patreon, you know, intensified a little bit, or I was asked a few times, then that kind of it forced my hand a little bit.
Did you find the transition tough? Hard. I mean, you mentioned there getting used to all the audio editing again, getting used to putting up your own promo clips, getting the podcast out in time. Did you find it tough?
Yeah, I did. I was nervous about it, you know, and just would I be able to do it? Would I be able to do it fast and not make mistakes and have it clean and looking good? Obviously, I was nervous. I was more nervous about how many people were going to subscribe, if I'm being honest with you. That was pretty much what was that was taking up most of my thoughts. The stress of who's going to come over, how many am I going to get over, how many like me enough to actually, you know, pay or like the show enough to pay. That was what I was more worried about. All the extra stuff was just workload, and I figured I could get, it's like any job, Keith, you know yourself, like, I mean, you're very relaxed talking to me now and you're only in fifth year. Yeah. And I'm sure you weren't like that for your first interview, you know? No, so like, no. it's like everything in every job, you get better at it as time goes on. I was stressed about the subscribers. That's what was keeping me awake at night.
Hmm. Just for listeners who don't know, it's Smaller Fish GA on Patreon. You can log on there, give Colm a listen. It's a brilliant podcast, I must say. How would you describe your kind of format? It's different, right? It's not your, you know, very serious podcast driven into the analyzing. I know from listening to it, I would say it's very relaxed. It's very, you know, let's say you're down at on a bar stool at a pub, you're chatting about the game that's just been on that weekend. It's very topical and it's very easy to listen to. But just how would you, from your point of view as a presenter, describe the format?
Yeah, I haven't put too much thought into how I describe the format. You know, it's very, I think it's just the way GAA people talk. I always tell the pundits that, you know, say if I don't always use the pub analogy because it's not always a good one. Like, you don't always fall in with people who know what they're talking about in the pub. But I like it. Say, like, I mean, you drop up to your club and there's an intermediate match up there and you get talking to a couple of lads, and how that conversation would go is pretty much how, you know, I like the show to sound. It's you're not, you know, you're just speaking very plainly about GAA, you know, as you might be watching another match. And I think that's important. I think it needs to be real GAA talk, because that's how people, I speak to GAA, that's how they speak. They speak, they're not watching what they say. They're not trying to, you know, make sure they don't offend anybody and they don't pull any punches. And I wouldn't speak any differently on the show as I would off the show. So, you know, I think people appreciate that you're not pandering to anybody and you're just calling it as you see it.
So, rewind to the start. I mean, you know, you had a very successful intercounty career, club career, brilliant player. Everyone knew you from your playing days. But how did the media work start? Because that's what you're most known for now. I mean, you know, your podcast, the GAA Hour, News Talk Off the Ball. How did it all start?
Yeah, I was recently asked to go in. It was a couple of years ago now. I was up in the Portlaoise club and an ex-manager of mine asked me to go in and talk to the under-14s. And when I went in, he asked him to put up your hand, who knows this man, and nobody put their hand up. So you're right, it's not true football I'm known for. And anyways, I had a very kind of, you know, checkered career. Anyways, I was there year.
It was successful now, Colin.
When I was good. When I'd some bad games. It's not that too many bad games, but I was gone. I'd be gone away, I'd drop off panels. I was a very frustrating player, I'm sure. If you liked watching me play, I'd say you'd pull your hair out, you know, at watching my career, because I would have been gone. I would have been, you know, and I'd say people got frustrated with that towards the end. But the whole thing with the media happened was I was working in finance. I was playing football. Football kind of dominates your thought process, and that's kind of all you care about while you're playing. And I didn't really think about my career. I was thinking, you know, what will happen will happen. I'm able to get out on time for work. You know, nobody's bothering me. I'm earning okay money in fund accounting. And, you know, I was just getting by. I hated the job, but the fact I hated the job was kind of covered up by the things I looked forward to at the weekends, or going back training, or having a big match, or, you know, something in Croke Park. So, you know, it wasn't until I finished playing that I got a bit of a break, and I was asked in on a News Talk Saturday panel, and that went fairly well. And I was asked on another one, and then News Talk had just got the rights to do commentary on GAA matches. And then they asked me to do some co-commentary work, and I did that, and I loved that. That's by far my favorite. Then I started doing some sideline reporting, and I loved that even more. And then I started thinking, you know, wonder, could I make a career out of this? So I quit my job in finance and I went back and did a master's in journalism in DCU. That was around 2012. I think I was 34, 35. So I went back full time for the year, did that. And then I got a break in News Talk. And that's kind of, the rest is history then. I was in News Talk for 3 years, joe.ie for 5.5, maybe 6. And, you know, I'm over a year now doing my own thing. So I think in nearly 10 years altogether in the media. So it just kind of came to me. You know, the co-commentaries and the sideline reporting. And then I took a huge risk. And I suppose I took a huge risk living in Dublin with no salary and, you know, spending my savings and maybe getting a loan here and there to tide me over. And, you know, he who dares wins, maybe, Keane.
Exactly, exactly. But talk to me about, when was the moment that it kind of all sparked? I mean, you mentioned the sideline reporting, you loved that. Was it the buzz? Was it the instant reaction? Was it the whole setup of the whole thing? What was the moment that kind of sparked it for you?
Yeah, but it wasn't really any specific moment. It was just like, I really enjoy this. I love the whole radio experience. I was very curious about it. I wanted to get better at it. And I knew I was good at the co-commentating. And I knew I was good at the sideline reporting. I knew I was pretty natural at it. And that's what I really liked doing. And then I was like, you know, I really like this. I wonder what actually, you know, working in radio full time would be like, the production side of it, the researching side of it, all those things. You know, and that's what just kind of made me curious about it. And then it kind of wouldn't leave my head. And then I was like, Jesus, you know, why not take a chance on it for a year, see what happens. And, you know, it nearly wasn't happening, you know, because as part of the course in DCU, you're put on work experience. And, you know, News Talk would have been my first choice, but I met Ger Gilroy, who's the boss in there, and he told me that the sports department is completely full. So that was gone. I tried RTE and they didn't even have the decency to get back to me. I think one of them pawned me off on something else. And this is
what a missed opportunity. Madam Colin Parkinson working for RTE.
This was an unpaid internship. Like, they had nothing to lose. They just did not want, you know, me to work in there at all. Because it was a win-win for them. They didn't have to pay me and just see what I'm like. But no. So then I started getting a little bit concerned. I did the work experience in News Talk in the end. And the sports department was full. And then all the old off the ball crew left, the second captains as they are now.
Yeah.
And that's the break. So that was the huge break I got, them leaving News Talk. If they hadn't left News Talk, I was considering going back to finance. I was, you know, looking at agencies and stuff to see, is there any jobs out there? Because it's a very small landscape, you know, the media in Ireland. And with me, with having kind of very opinionated and wouldn't go down well with everybody, you know, it's pretty closed off for me, you know, because if I was to finish what I'm doing now, like News Talk, I've burnt bridges with them. RTE wouldn't touch off me. Where do you go then? So this is where I was very nervous with that subscriber situation.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
you
yeah.
can understand where I'm coming from. And Sports Show probably moving away from that podcast. I'm, you know, they haven't had a sponsor on it in a good few years. And, you know, with the option even to go back there. So I was really, really putting all my eggs into the smaller fish basket, I suppose.
It's paying off, though. It's paying off. I mean, there's a lot of subscribers at the moment. I know you recently did an interview with, was it the Irish Times?
Yeah, Malachy Clerkin, yeah.
Malachy Clerkin, yeah. Yeah, I read that. It seems to be a good reaction.
There's been a great reaction. Now, listen, it's all new. So last summer, I peaked at over 4,000 subscribers. That was in June, around All-Ireland semi-final time, All-Ireland, or All-Ireland quarter-final time, where there'd be, you know, 8 teams in there. And then in July, it dropped down a little bit. There'd be only 2 teams left in hurling and football. And then it started dropping for the club season. I lost 300 in August, 300 in September. And I was in a terrible panic going, if I continue on this trajectory, I'll be out of business in fucking December. And then a flatline then, it kind of stopped. It stopped, they stopped falling off in October, November. And I think it was around 3,250 by the end of the year. And now I'm back up near 3,700 again. So now I'm a little bit more secure in the fact that it's going to go up in the summer, it's going to peak in June, and it's going to fall off. And hopefully, you know, if I keep doing good work and putting out good interviews and, you know, people trust that the analysis is good and honest, that people will come back again, you know, for the intercounty season. Because look, a lot of people, when the intercounty season's over, they might subscribe to a soccer podcast because that's getting big. And then they might subscribe to a rugby one. And then in the summer, they like the GEA and they'll subscribe back to my one, you know. So there's loads of that going on.
I mean, it was a gamble, as you said at the time. It's paying off now. You mentioned subscribers there. How do you find people's reaction to the podcast? What are the main takeaways from it for people who haven't subscribed or listened to this or think about subscribing? What are the main takeaways from it?
I don't know. The main takeaways, it's like, I mean, I think that we analyze the games pretty well. I think I do a lot of good interviews with current players. That if it's a whole package of GEA, I do football and hurling. If you're a GEA fan and you want GEA content from Sunday night until Thursday, pretty much every day during the summer, if you're a commuter, you know, if you're in a job where you can stick in the earphones, you know, if you work in a factory and you're on nights in the prison on nights, you'll have for 6 euro 15 a month, you'll have pretty much at least four podcasts in that week. So it's pretty good value, and there's a good mix. There's, you know, there's hurling, there's football, there's interviews, there's hurling and farming with Damien Hayes. That I do an Australia show where I, you know, once a month where I speak to some of the Irish down under, it's called. So like there's loads of stuff in there. I think it's pretty well priced for what you're getting. You know, if you break down how many podcasts you're getting in a month, like you're looking at about 20 cents a show, and that could be an hour long. So, you know, you'd be lucky to get, what would you get for 20 cent nowadays, Cian? You're younger than me.
Not even a Freddo bear. just rewind back to Off the Ball. I mean, you got the break in there. The second captain's left. There was a vacancy in there. I think you went in there part-time at first, wasn't it? Part-time.
I went in there. Yeah, most jobs, Cian, you go in part-time. You kind of have to prove yourself, you know, and that's, you're on probation maybe for 6 months. But I think it was probationary period. That's what they'll call it. A lot of jobs could be 6 months. I think I was 3 months in News Talk before it was made permanent. So that was good.
And how did you find your role there?
I went a little bit uncomfortable on the radio at first because I suppose we were replacing the second captains, and they were hugely popular and they were doing it for so long. And I was on with Joe Malloy mostly, and he was brand new into the job and I was brand new into the job, and I didn't really know what I was doing. He was probably nervous. I was nervous. And let's be honest, it's like starting any job. I didn't feel that we were great at the start. And I knew that the previous show had been hugely popular, and I felt a little bit out of my depth and a little bit insecure until, I don't know, you just kind of have to be yourself instead of trying to copy what they were doing. And I felt some of the production team were trying to push me in a direction of being the Murph, for example, or, you know, and I just said after a while, I said, just going to be myself. And I don't have to be Murph's role. I can just, like, I have opinions on things, and, you know, I'll just give them. And we can disagree on it, and people might like listening to that. So when I started being myself a bit more and less nervous and less worried, I think the show started getting better. And obviously Joe was probably getting less nervous and being himself more. And, you know, it's not easy to find your way in a new job when it's on a national radio station. You're kind of thrown in at the deep end.
Especially in that moment in time when you're replacing the second captains.
Well, that added to the pressure of it for sure. Yeah. And it was so established, and, you know, they had their set roles and stuff. And I really do think that the production team in there didn't want to move too far away from what they did, because it was so, I think a lot of them listened to them an awful lot and they kind of wanted it to stay similar. I'm not sure. But that was kind of how it worked.
I'm guessing you were doing a bit of punditry, a bit of presenting. Looking back now, which do you prefer? I know you like giving your opinions, you like giving your takes, your hot takes, but you also do the presenting now, especially with your show. Which do you prefer?
Well, you see, I don't really present as in a presenter. I wouldn't be a very polished presenter, for example. I wouldn't read off scripts. I would just start the show talking. And I think I'm pretty much a pundit, really keeping the conversation taking over, because I give opinions on the football show. On the hurling show, I'm more of a presenter where I'm curious and asking questions. You know, I'm supposed to know the answers to those on the football show, whether I do or not. But it's definitely a different style. I find the hurling show can be more enjoyable because the pressure is not on me to have answers. I can just kind of tease it out with the pundits or give my take on it and go, is this stupid or is there anything in this? You know, I don't feel as much pressure for the hurling show. I can kind of enjoy it a bit more, especially watching the matches. I don't feel as under as much pressure to, you know, see something or find it. So that's kind of the way it is. But yeah, I don't know as regards presenting, you know, the stereotypical polished presenter like a Joe Malloy, who I think is a really polished presenter. I would be a little bit rougher around the edges, you know, than presenters like him.
Mm. Yeah. You mentioned there you like giving your takes, you like giving your opinions. You like giving them on Twitter as well, be it sports, politics, whatever. Do you strive on that? Do you like, you know, causing, being provocative, causing, some would say, controversy, and just, you know, telling how it is in your eyes?
Yeah, I don't. The controversial kind of tag has always stayed with me for some reason. I think it was the comments I made about Mick O'Dwyer a long time ago, and that was a little bit tongue in cheek. But I genuinely would challenge anyone to say, what do I say in a GAA context that's controversial? Like, you know, I don't think I do. I give opinions. Opinions aren't controversial. You can agree with them or you don't have to agree with them. But I don't think I'm controversial. I can definitely on the Smaller Fish GAA account now, which is just only a GAA account. I don't think there's anything controversial on that account at all. Now, my personal account, you know, can have some opinions, and I would challenge anyone to say whether they're controversial or not. They're another opinion and you might not like it. You know, it might piss you off, but that doesn't mean it's controversial. I would see myself very middle of the road. I'm not an extremist. I like to think of a lot of common sense. And sometimes people with common sense annoy extremists because they want you to be off on either side being an extremist like them. So they don't like people speaking in common sense. Like. Well, that's it. And that's the way I feel that I am on the other account. And look, I used to do a lot of winding up on Twitter for a lot of years. I enjoyed the wind-ups. Now, I don't enjoy getting involved in arguments and stuff because it preoccupies my mind. And, you know, I'd be trying to watch television with Itzy and I'm just thinking about what, you know, who's replied to that or... Seriously, it can be mental a little life. Bit, it can be mental, it can be stressful, and it can seep into your private life then as well, because you can't switch off from it. And then I'd regret, what the hell was I tweeting that for? Sometimes you mightn't think it might get, you know, as bad a reaction, maybe as it did. And you're kind of going, oh God, this is the last thing I need now on a feckin' Friday night or something like that.
Isn't that the world we live in? Like, everything's an outrage. You know, you post an opinion, someone's going to label you something, someone's going to... You know,
there's very little you can say now that will not be attacked by somebody. And I'm getting that all the time. But I've chosen, I don't interact with them really anymore. I used to, just because if I was bored, it would entertain me taking the piss a little bit out of the ones. But I don't give it any energy, because you can never beat them. Because if you reply, they'll say, oh, they'll put a fish, go fishing emoji, like they've somehow hooked you because you replied to them. Like, you can't beat them. And if you try to speak in logic to them, it'll go in one ear and out the other. And there's no point. There's no point, really. So you're better off just tweeting and maybe muting the conversation, and it's done. You put out what you think. But then you see, I don't like doing that as much either, because I get some great feedback as well as nonsense. Some, like, you often see with my tweets, when I'd be preparing a show on a Tuesday for the Wednesday or a Wednesday for the Thursday, and I'm researching the talking points, I might tweet out about some of the things and I get some good, you know, great ideas for how the conversation will go. So I find it very useful that way, you know, because everybody's not a maniac there. There's a lot of maniacs, but you get some people who, you know, have good opinions on things, and it can kind of help me, prepare the show.
Yeah. We're going to move on to brass tacks. We're going to move on to football. Look, I've told you I'm a Mayo man. We're going to get to the point, as the podcast says. Where does Colin Parkinson think Mayo are at this moment in time? We've just been knocked out of the Connacht Championship. We have, 5 weeks off this stage before we go into the round robin. Where are Mayo at this moment in time?
you're out of Connacht anyways, as you've established. You're league champions, and you know you're very, very serious All-Ireland contenders. I don't think that changes because you lost a game that your preparation wasn't ideal for. You know, in Connacht on a wet day where Roscommon were offered, and some people disrespect Roscommon, are a very good team, and they have a very good manager as well. So I think Mayo are All-Ireland semi-finalists. You know, they're absolutely in the top three, four, top three All-Ireland contenders, I would say, with Dublin and Kerry. I think they have a very strong team. I don't think that loss, that's a kick up the arse. Sometimes you'd prefer to get the kick up the arse there in Connacht than in an All-Ireland quarterfinal, for example. So, like, you know, I don't think this will have done Mayo any harm. It definitely was a kick in the arse to them because they were riding high and they weren't expecting it. It could be a blessing in disguise. You could be Mayo for Sam, and they'll all reference that match against Roscommon because you learn more from your losses and all these kind of things. And it's no harm being dragged down to earth every now and then in a season without it being fatal, right? So, like, the worst place to be dragged down to earth is, like I said, in a quarterfinal, semi-final, you know, and that's it. So I don't think it'll do Mayo any harm. I don't think the 6-week break is ideal. They're lucky they're going into a round robin group with three teams getting out. So I think they will get out of the group for that reason. So I see them in the All Ireland quarterfinals, semi-finals. I see them as serious. Nothing changes on the basis of one game, as far as I'm concerned.
But would you veer into the debate that a lot of people are having in Mayo, saying that this is brilliant, right? We've 6 weeks off, you know, because Colm Key said it on the Mayo Football Podcast that, you know, previously, if you won the provincials, it was the easiest way into a quarterfinal and into a semi-final. It sets you up brilliantly. Now it's the hardest way with the schedule. You're going straight into round robin. You're playing so much games, beating the provincial championship and then in the round robin. Would you agree with that debate that this is brilliant for Mayo?
I don't think it's brilliant for Mayo. No, 6 weeks is too long as far as I'm concerned. They're probably having to go back into some horrible feckin', you know, cardio training and long distance and run the shit out of each other, and no player wants to go back into that in the middle of the summer. And 6 weeks is too long to just stay ticking over, so they have to drop it down a bit and try to build it back up again and start all that again. It wasn't in the plan, so that's definitely changed. Like I said, 6 weeks now, and if you look, Galway or Roscommon are going to be in the Connacht final, and they're going to win the Connacht final, and they'll win the Connacht final pretty comfortably. So you're not in a terrible situation after winning Connacht. You have 2 weeks before the Connacht final, you have probably another week after it, and you have a relatively, you're playing a Division 4. So you have one Division 4 match against Division 4 opposition in 4 weeks. That doesn't sound like a bad schedule to me. I think too much has been made out of that. And I think Mayo would probably prefer. The only thing when maybe looking back on it, like, it's that kick up the arse. That's that non-fatal kick up the arse. But the 6 weeks is definitely not ideal. No way. At least the next game, had they lost, it's four, you know. And like I said, ideally, I'd say they'd prefer just to go straight through, win that, beat the Division 4 team in the final, not kill themselves, take off anyone that's carrying Knox, and go into that All-Ireland series as All-Ireland champions, or as Connacht champions.
What do you think of the Mayo management, Kevin McStay and Stephen Rochford?
I think they're smart. I think Rochford's very good. I think McStay, I think McStay is a smart man. I think as a pundit, I think he was losing it a little bit, if I'm being honest. I don't think he was have some strange opinions that I wouldn't have agreed with. Maybe that's me losing it, not Kevin McStay, but it's my opinion, I suppose. So I think he was getting some obvious calls kind of wrong. And I don't think he was as secure in his position, but I think he's a good manager. For sure, he got a lot of management nowadays is getting a good backroom team in. He definitely did that. Organizing things. I think he'll keep a happy camp. I think he's a little bit too sweet to be wholesome in his interviews after games, a little bit too
But is that tactical?
I don't know. I think maybe that's hit. I think that's
the
maybe
way, the way the relationship was with Horn. It was very, it was quite toxic towards the end, especially.
Yeah, Horn would be more of a spiky character. Maybe he seems to be on the PR job big time. That's what you'd kind of take from McStay. You'd nearly say it's slightly fake a little bit in the interviews, nearly too nice and too PR. Maybe that's just a conscious decision to be, you know, to to you know, be a bit different than Horan. But I suppose it's easier to be nice when you're winning all the time. I say, you know, he was pretty you know, good after Roscommon game, but lose another one or two now and let's see what Max tastes like in an interview. You know, Horan had a very bad year really in his last year, so you're at getting asked all those same questions. I'm sure it's not easy.
Will the Dubs come back to fruition? You said they're all Ireland contenders. Will they come back and will they win it?
Dublin are definitely in the mix for sure. Dublin, what's holding Dublin back is their manager, as far as I'm concerned. He doesn't have them playing good football. He has them moving the ball way too slow. He's not getting the best out of Fenton. He's not getting the best out of Conor Callaghan. He's not getting the best out of Kilkenny. These are some of the best players that have ever played the game, and they never kick it into Con, and they very rarely kick it long, a long kick out to Fenton. It just doesn't make any sense. What kind of manager would not make the most of their qualities by giving Fenton long kickouts and telling Fenton to catch it and turn around and kick it into Con, who's arguably as good as Combe himself and Comer, probably the two best ball winning full forwards, and they don't do it. They just don't do it. It's hard to believe. You know, and I like the look of O'Gara in beside Conor Callaghan. I'd have Paul Mannion out in front of them, and they'd be the three I'd leave up, a little bit like Mayo shape, you know. But Dublin, it's not that there's all Ireland's left in Dublin. But I don't think Desi's up to much. I'm disappointed with the impact Pat Gilroy has had this year, because I don't see too much change with them this year, other than the fact they're going a bit longer from their kickout. So Hanlon is starting to hit the middle. But even when they hit the middle, they're not looking around to hit the full forward line. They're just playing away and still, you know, it's like, why did you go long with your kickout if you don't want to, take advantage of it? That's where there's one-on-ones when everyone's pressed up. And it's all very confusing as far as I'm concerned. I can see Mayo. I can see they're a well-coached team and they know what they're doing. I see Dublin as not as a more talented team than Mayo, but I don't think they know what they're doing to the same extent.
I guess, what is your take on Kerry at the moment? Some would say they're starting slow this year. They had a, you know, brilliant year last year. They went right to, it was like a grand slam. Will they pick up form, and will they essentially retain the All-Ireland?
I don't think they'll retain it, because it's very difficult to retain it. You have to be exceptional to retain it. And Dublin were the first team really to retain it for a long time, other than Kerry in the noughties. And Kerry were exceptional. I don't think this Kerry team is exceptional and good enough without that, you know, raw desire to win it like they had last year. I don't think Kerry will retain it. I think Dublin or Mayo will probably win it. I can't see anybody else winning it. Maybe you give Galway an outside chance, you know, to win it as well. But it'll be one of those four for sure. I don't think it'll be Kerry though. But Kerry are having a worry in the world. They didn't care about the league. They got through it. They didn't get relegated, and now they have an easy Munster Championship, and they're going to be primed. They're going to get a few games, Tipperary this weekend, and then it'll be Clare Limerick. You know, they're heading into that All Ireland series. You know, Jesus, they'll be the freshest, and if they can time the run, you know, fairly well and ramp it up, they'll start their season only starts for that All Ireland series. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, give me your take on the new structure. A lot's been said, a lot's been spoken. You spoke about it on your own podcast. Maybe to those who haven't listened to that, what is your take on the new structure?
I don't have a problem with it. I don't see what all the fuss is about. It's a little bit, I like the split season, even though it's not ideal for my business because all the subscribers are jumping off in fucking...
at least you're being honest.
In August rather than in October. So, you know, me campaigning for this split season wasn't the smartest business thing I've ever done. You know, but listen, the split season's great. I think that there's too many games crammed into this side of the year. I don't think the provincials really needed in the middle of it. I think the league following into that All-Ireland series will be more than enough. There'll be a little bit more breathing space. And we're lucky this year we didn't have kind of weather that was calling off league games, which we usually have in March. That would really have messed the season up. Mm. But you shouldn't be punished for winning you shouldn't be at a disadvantage for winning your provincial championships. And there's more difficult ones than Connacht, and that's only in a year that, you know, you'll have a Division 4 team in the final. Ulster champions will be disadvantaged going in. They'll have a really difficult schedule. I think that's wrong, but they were trying to please everybody, Keane. That was the problem. Like, I mean, the provincial championships hold and provincial councils hold so much power that they had to plow amongst them somewhere, or no change would have been voted in. So what I think will happen is another 2 or 3 years of this, provincial champions, if they don't go much further in the All-Ireland series, teams will stop caring about, they'll start taking a rest during the provincials, and it'll be league and it'll be All-Ireland series, and the provincials will kind of, you know, maybe in 5 years the provincials will just be pulled out of there altogether.
You give me three or four counties there who you think are going to win it. If you had to pick one, who would that be?
I don't know. I've already eliminated Kerry because I don't think they'll retain it.
Dublin or Mayo?
It'll be Dublin, Mayo or Galway, I suppose. I don't want to rule Galway. I don't want to rule Galway out.
Dark horses.
Even though they didn't play well at all against Mayo in Croke Park, and you know they beat Derry and Armagh in Croke Park, you know, last year. So they haven't really taken out a big gun in Croke Park yet, even though they played so well against Kerry. I'll go Mayo for Sam Keane. Listen, I'll keep it real.
Brilliant.
And we'll say
you're going to get a load of new subscribers now to the Small Fish Year.
I don't see why not. I think they have the burning desire. I think they have the management. They have a good structure. They play good football, and they'll be a Croke Park team as well. I don't see why it wouldn't be Mayo. Mayo's year.
Even Joe Biden thinks it. look, we're going to finish off with a quick fire round. I haven't sent you the questions, so it's going to be, you know, to the point as it says. So I'm going to start off with, what is Colin Parkinson's favourite pastime?
Favourite pastime? I go to CrossFit, which I'm really enjoying at the moment. I like treks. I like having a few beers. I like eating out, things like that. Playing with the children.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Okay, what type? Black?
I like Americanos, yeah.
Americano, yeah. No milk?
Oh, I like milk in it. I need milk in it, yeah. I wouldn't go black.
Favourite GAA pundit?
Favourite GAA pundit? Tomás O'Shea.
Yeah, very good. Very good shout. What's your biggest advice to young broadcasters or presenters? That's essentially what you are now. What would be your biggest advice to people like myself?
Yeah, I find them really, really, really difficult questions to answer because, you know, I don't really know what advice I'd give you is
from your own experience.
Work really hard. That's definitely noticed. Work really hard when you get a chance to go in somewhere, impress them, and you know, don't ever say no or you have to go home early or anything like that. That's out of the question. I remember when I started in News Talk, I worked out of 29 days out of 30 in June, and then 30 out of 31 days in July. Because I was doing weekend matches, you know, and it's like any job that I start off, you have to impress the people that you're working for. You have to make them trust you. You have to make them know that you're a really, really hard grafter, because first impressions are the ones that last. There's no point in them thinking you're lazy and then trying to work hard to change their minds. That's probably too late at that stage.
Good advice. Favorite TV series?
Favorite TV series? I like Game of Thrones. I suppose that was kind of a big one. All those ones on Netflix I watch, not necessarily TV too much.
Are you on the Succession train?
No, I haven't looked at that yet. I've been watching a lot of those Viking ones, all these feckin' Valhalla ones, and
Christ.
Yeah, Vikings, and yeah, there's a couple more. Can't think now what other ones I was watching. But with Jenny, what was the one? The one with all the feckin' sisters, the Handmaids. That was a Handmaid's Tale, slow burn. It starts slowly, but it gets pretty watchable then after that. That was the last one, I think. The last long series that we watched.
Okay. Highlight of your career?
Well, like, I've only won one All-Ireland, and that's a minor one. So I suppose that's the pinnacle, even though it was underage. The of a Leinster club. That was a huge highlight because I was captain of the team. Suppose the Leinster with Laois wasn't as big a highlight because I had been injured all that year, and I missed it all. And by the time I came back, I wasn't really right and was fairly shit. So that was that wasn't a great year. I would say probably winning the Leinster club with Port Laois and lifting that cup, because I got player of the year in Laois and player of the year in Leinster that year. That was a nice, enjoyable year.
Who's your favourite GAA player of all time?
God, there's a lot of them now, I have to say. Graham Geraghty was always my hero growing up because I loved him. And my career positions on the field. He started off wing back, went wing forward, went full forward. I followed that completely, not because he was my hero. That just seemed to happen. I was like a poor man's version of Graham Geraghty. Like, if you, I always say, if you didn't have enough money in fantasy football to buy Geraghty, you could buy me, who would do a similar personal job, just not as good. So I go for Geraghty because he was just such a class act.
If you were to have any five dinner guests, dead or alive, who would be at the table?
Five's hard. Liam Gallagher, hero of mine growing up, a complete loose cannon, and a gas man. Roy Keane, they'd be two. They'd be two well. Definites. I think they would probably get on well. All right. Who the other three are? That's kind of maybe a little bit up for debate. I haven't thought of five. Who else would I put in there?
Would you have any colleagues?
Any colleagues from media the media?
Yeah.
Probably not. Probably, let's just go with me, Gallagher and Roy Keane.
Dinner for three. The other three didn't show up. last question. It's probably even tougher. Describe yourself in three words.
Oh, geez, that's a tough one as well, Keane. You're killing me with this one. Opinionated, moody, and funny.
Colin Parkinson, absolute pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Keane.